to understand why I loved Metal Ball so much, you're going to have to understand the world that Metal Ball lived in and why, in that world, I found so much solace in Metal Ball existing. Buckle in, it's a bit of a ride. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Metal Ball wasn't their real name. I mean, obviously, it wasn't their real name out in the real world, but I mean, on the mud, which was named Tiny Tim, the username was metal.ball. And I wasn't really sure if that dot was meant to indicate the actual ball itself, or if metal.ball just thought this was a good idea. But I quickly just called them Metal Ball, and whenever the other administrators slash wizards who ran Tiny Tim talked about them, they always called them, basically, Metal Ball. Here's the thing when you run something like a MUD, a multi-user underground dungeon. Initially, it's designed as some sort of multi-user role-playing system. People come on with characters and descriptions, and they actually play a character. If that character has the ability to fly, you'll hear discussions about them flying around. If they're from science fiction, they will look at the world in a strange way and have powers you don't expect. And in my case, if you are playing a cow, you spend a lot of time mooing. But as the years go by, and whatever audience your MUD attracts grows older, over time people use it a lot less to explore and learn, and they use a lot more of it to chat and kibitz and talk about what's going on in their real lives. I totally get that. But as somebody who was spending hours and years of his life keeping this system running and dealing with all of the little behind-the-scenes issues, it was always a little bit disappointing to have somebody who played a Klingon never really be speaking in that language for any amount of time, or having somebody role-playing a dragon rider of Pern, or a vampire, or some sort of bizarre scientist, and then stop doing it just because time had marched on. It would get to the point that I would have to look at someone's description to even remind myself what this person's quote-unquote character used to be. This kind of brings us into MUDs, which I only discussed once or twice before. Tiny Tim, which was originally started in 1990, was a major part of my life for about 10 years. It was my social nexus. It was my way of meeting people and having things to do, and where I learned to become, in some sort of way, an organizer, a person who would keep track of what everyone needed and try to satisfy it, to make those kind of behind-the-scenes choices to keep the whole endeavor running, along with all the day-to-day annoyances just to make sure people were happy. I haven't talked about it a lot because at the end of the 10 years, I had to walk away. It didn't go very well, and there just seemed no sense in bringing up old problems. But I wanted to talk about Metal Ball because the arc of Metal Ball is absolutely delicious. Metal Ball rolled into the main chat area one day and played a Metal Ball. Metal Ball didn't speak. Metal Ball didn't make any sort of statements. Metal Ball did things, to be sure, but never actually spoke. Instead, they would role play day in and day out as the Metal Ball. By this time, I have been co-running Tiny Tim for years. I've seen it all, I thought, and yet something about this character staying around and interacting with people was absolutely charming. Sometimes you don't even know the layers of cynicism and expectation that you've built up running some sort of social space, but Metal Ball consistently played a ball. If you looked at them, they had the attributes of a ball. If you interacted with them, they would roll around, agreeing with you, or stay in place, not agreeing with you. Occasionally, Metal Ball would roll away to do something, I'm not sure what, and then return, perhaps a little bit dirty or coated in something that represented the realms they had traveled through. Nobody knew what adventures Metal Ball had had when they came back, because they couldn't tell you. Sometimes Metal Ball could give you messages. It would roll and there would be words written on the underside of it, so it could provide complex thoughts here and there. But mostly, it would just tell you that Metal Ball is just a ball. That's a pretty strong enough gag in itself, but it lasted for years. Years and years, Metal Ball would be around. Let's pull back a little bit and talk about Tiny Tim. Started in 1990 by myself and my friend John Rossigno, who I'd known in high school, Tiny Tim was itself a parody of other Tiny Muds that existed around the time. The whole software experience was called a Tiny Mud because it was a reboot of a larger program called Mud that had been created by Richard Bartle in the 1970s and 1980s in Britain. A student named Jim Aspness had rewritten it in C so that it could run on a bunch of Unix machines, and it had a default port of 4201, a number which was etched into everyone's mind as the way to find out if a machine had a MUD running on it, and which was ascribed to being all sorts of important ports. But when I interviewed Jim Aspness, he told me, oh, that was my room number at my college. I got to meet both Jim Aspness and Richard Bartle at various points of the documentaries, and there wasn't much to say about the actual worlds of MUDs beyond talking about text adventures influencing them, because it was a world so close to me and one that I had become so entwined with that you might as well speak to the creator of restaurants or the creator of nightclubs for all that you had it influence everything you did. If you were on a MUD, you were on the MUD. The other name for it was the multi-undergraduate destroyer. I witnessed and know of plenty of stories of people who would start to play on a MUD in their freshman year of college, and by the time it gets around midterms, they have spent so much time chatting with people, building little worlds, and basically ignoring all the rest of their lives that they would drop out. It would literally destroy them. The interface was 100% text. This meant that you could do it from anywhere. In the 1990s, our phones couldn't quite do it, but we could do this from almost any terminal at any location we could find, and anywhere we could get an internet connection, we could telnet over to a client and connect to a MUD. So it became your link wherever you were to interacting with this set of folks. As a person who spent 10 years working on this game, from when I was 19 to when I was 29, it was an all-consuming project to involve myself with it, and all these people who connected to it often started out as simple concepts and characters, and then became very difficult or very easy, very close or very mean folks in your lives. They were the center of your social circle because you spent so much time talking with them. Other games in this ilk tended to have pretty strict rules about behavior, what kind of world you were making, and even limits on how you could role play. And Tiny Tim was meant to be a respite from all that. It had programming so you could build worlds in it, but nobody liked to use it. The amount of people who were doing actual deep programming in the Tiny Tim system of environmental building was so vanishingly small as a percentage. The people who did build in it were never satisfied with the programming system. Our main programmer, Renice, did what he could to add all sorts of features and abilities, but in the aggregate, I don't think enough people made use of it. What Tiny Tim was a rather complicated CB radio system. CB, which stands for Citizens Band, was a fad in the 1970s where low-powered ability to talk over radio became the big hit, and a lot of people, including my family, purchased CB radio systems for their car where you could go on to a channel, say ridiculous things, and interact with other people on the road. You got yourself a handle. And a lot of this was influenced, of all places, by Smokey and the Bandit, the movie where a rascal and his friend with a truck move an illegal amount of beer over a distribution limit to win a bet. So everybody's got a handle, and the idea that wherever he goes, people know him, and he's got this famous reputation, it kind of transferred over into the idea of owning a CB radio in your car, and then calling yourself something you weren't as you talk to people. This quickly becomes the toehold for chat systems online. When people tried to understand why you would even want to use a chat system, you could say it was like CB radio. Come use our CB chat. MUDs were just more of that CB chat, except you could send text messages, which meant you could send descriptions or create an idea in space that you moved around in and then interacted with as if it was an object or an actual place. The illusion, like all text adventures, was very strong until you stayed there for years on end, and then it became, very simply, a CB radio. It was into this world that Metal Ball rolled into my life. And what I'm talking about here is less about the gimmick, the idea of being a metal ball that doesn't actually talk, except it does, except it doesn't, but the fact that at the time I became extremely enamored at the idea of never knowing who Metal Ball was. As I understand it, the person who manipulated Metal Ball did meet some of my other co-wizards and other users of the game, but Metal Ball and I never met. I never talked to Metal Ball. I never listened to a human voice claiming that it in some way had anything to do with Metal Ball. One of my co-administrators, name of Nimdok, told me about meeting Metal Ball, and I would just say, "Is Metal Ball okay?" And Nimdok would say, "Yes, Metal Ball is okay," because otherwise I would have done everything in my power to make Metal Ball happy. I would have gladly handed over money to Nimdok to say, "Make Metal Ball right. Make sure Metal Ball is good." And as everything else that I've had time to think about, my attraction to keeping the mystery of Metal Ball is that as life goes on, mystery tends to disappear. Whether through cynicism or experience, you figure out how the magic tricks work. You know that things just don't happen in the world and are usually motivated by something involving money or power or greed, or something involving people who want to get something other than joy out of others. Things are just jobs. Things are just stunts meant to deflect people away from where they're spending their money. And when something comes by that for at least a while you can convince yourself is actually there for the purity of it, that is so rare and so special in your life, it would become, for me, a dream that I refused, if I could have anything to do with it, to wake up from. If I could keep my eyes closed and convince myself that in my weird online world that it consumed so much of my life, almost all of my relationships, and most of my time, I would gladly work as hard as I could to never have that pierced. It's been almost 20 years since I've interacted with the Metal Ball. I hope that, wherever they are, the people who may or may not have had something to do with the maintenance of Metal Ball are happy, healthy, and safe. But I also can tell you that Metal Ball is, in my mind, still shiny, still rolling around, a perfect sphere of a character, living inside a virtual world I never visit anymore, but that lives on, in its own way, in my dreams. And as long as I keep that small part of my world close to me, I can never truly say that the world is without joy, is without something pure and special, and that it's not an absolute privilege to keep living in it. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Joshua Stein, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If you've done something for 10 years, you could probably make a storytelling podcast just about that world. Tiny Tim certainly had all sorts of wondrous things in there. There were moments of comedy, moments of tragedy, personal and private, along with a whole range of skills I've used elsewhere in my life. My resistance to going into it is that the stories quickly become repetitive. You met a person online, you did stuff with them, it went well, or it didn't, and you moved on to the next story. Working as a wizard or administrator on a MUD is essentially working trouble tickets. Players can't get their stuff working, two people are not getting along, other people are trying to make the system do something it can't, or you're trying to research something that everyone is trying to figure out, and you might have access to information they don't. A lot of this has been obviated by search engines and forums and being able to look things up instantly, but at the time, MUDs could work as your personal search engine and social hangout to find things, to learn about things, to discuss them, and to experience, for some people, the primary love of family and friends that they weren't getting elsewhere. And Tiny Tim, which is still around at tim.org, port 5440, via Telnet, it's always going to be something special to me, even if day-to-day it's not something that's a part of my life anymore. And if, by some magic, Metal Ball hears this podcast, I still love you.